Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, December 23rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Holidays. What could go wrong? Bloomington Normal Hospitals offer tips to avoid holiday-related injuries from Bloomington. The holiday season is a time for gathering, celebrating, and sharing, but it's also a time when slips, falls, and mishaps can earn underprepared revelers an unexpected trip to the emergency room. One common source of injuries with over 13,000 across the country every year is holiday decorating, said Lori Ritter, a registered nurse in the trauma center at Carl Bromed Medical Center in Normal. An amazing amount of injuries come to us from decorating. You're on a ladder, on a roof, putting up lights. What could go wrong? At this point in the season, it may not even be safe to string up any holiday lights, said Dr. Julie Lewis, a Joliet native who practices emergency medicine at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. If you have not put them up now, it's too late. Things are frozen. Just skip this year. Once surfaces start to freeze, thaw, and refreeze, getting on a ladder or a roof is too risky. Definitely, I would not advise that anybody's climbing on a roof at this time of year. Leave that to Santa. Another overlooked hazard around Christmas is often the star of the show, the tree. Trees fall over. They fall on kids. They fall on pets. Trees can be made even more dangerous when they're more often than not covered in dozens, if not hundreds, of small, brittle ornaments. Ornaments break. They cause lacerations. Speaking of lacerations, have you tried to open a plastic clamshell package lately? Ritter also urges everyone to use caution when opening stubborn toy packaging. My nephew ended up with a tendon laceration from his adventure trying to open a package on Christmas for his son with a knife. So yes, incredibly dangerous. Other seemingly mundane activities require more attention and caution this time of year, like driving. I like to always test my brakes as soon as I get on the surface when it is snowing or when it's wet, so you see how your car is going to react. So, you know, just to be more cautious. Stop sooner at stoplights. Leave increased distance between you and the car in front of you. Travelers should stock blankets or sleeping bags in their vehicles in case they get stuck in freezing conditions. You don't realize that in 30 minutes you can have frostbite, so try to cover exposed surfaces, tips of things, tips of ears, tips of nose, tips of fingers. Those aren't going to get quite the circulation you want. I also think it's good. I used to have one of those kids' shovels for shoveling snow, and I'd stick that in the back of my car. Because I've been in those situations where one tire is stuck in a little mound of snow and you need to dig it out. Wet or icy conditions call for people, particularly those with reduced mobility, to be more vigilant, even when traveling short distances, like from their car to the front door. If you're somebody who's supposed to use a walker or a cane, please don't think that's the time to negate using those things, because they really do help so that you don't fall. Falling is especially risky for folks as they age. Younger people seem to bounce back, literally and figuratively, but as people get older, we see more wrist fractures, hip fractures, and unfortunately, in patients who are specifically on blood thinners, we'll see intracranial bleeds. So she cautions everyone to avoid walking on ice or on frozen bodies of water. Of course, the holidays also have some of the biggest feast days of the year, and unfortunately, this is also a potential hazard. There's a lot of folks that just get, like, cardiac issues from the holidays. The stress on the heart of the heavy meal, maybe a little family drama, perhaps. While Ritter is not advocating for folks to abstain from celebrating, she encourages people to celebrate moderately. It's so easy to overindulge. You'll have a really hearty breakfast, you'll snack all day, then you have a big dinner. So our suggestions are smaller meals. Try to limit the saturated fats. Try to limit the alcohol. It's when indulging is in excess that it becomes an issue. Also on the front page, holiday travel. New records expected as Americans drive and fly. Drivers and airline passengers without reindeer and sleighs better make a dash for it. It's beginning to look like another record for holiday travel in the U.S. The Auto Club AAA predicted that more than 119 million people will have traveled at least 50 miles from home between Saturday, December 21st and New Year's Day, which would top the previous holiday season high set in 2019. The two weekends on either side of Christmas look to be some of the most crowded times on the road and at airports. Trade group Airlines for America also foresees record travel, saying it expected U.S. airlines to carry 54 million passengers during a 19-day period that started Thursday and ends Monday, January 6th. The number would represent a 6% increase over last year. What will be the busiest travel days? Airlines expected to have their busiest days on Friday and Sunday, and on December 26th and 27th, and December 29th. Flight traffic is expected to be light on both Christmas Day and New Year's Day. The slowest U.S. air travel day this year by a wide margin was Thanksgiving Day. The Transportation Security Administration expects to screen 40 million passengers over the holidays and through January 2nd. About 90% of Americans traveling far from home over the holidays will be in cars, according to AAA. Airline travel is just really high right now, but most people do drive to their destinations, and that is true for every holiday. Gasoline prices are similar to last year. The nationwide average Thursday was $3.05 a gallon, down from $3.08 a year ago, according to AAA. Charging an electric vehicle averages just under 35 cents per kilowatt hour, but varies by state. Transportation data firm INRIX says travel times on the nation's highways could be up to 30% longer than normal over the holidays, with Sunday expected to see the heaviest traffic. Boston, New York City, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. are the metropolitan areas prime for the greatest delays, according to the company. Weather and other wildcards. Because the holiday travel period lasts weeks, airports and airlines typically have smaller peak days than they do during the rush around Thanksgiving, given the grind of one hectic day followed by another takes a toll on flight crews. And another hiccup, a winter storm or a computer outage can snowball into massive disruptions. That is how Southwest Airlines stranded 2 million travelers in December 2022, and Delta Airlines suffered a smaller but significant meltdown after a worldwide technology outage in July caused by a faulty software update from cybersecurity company CrowdStrike. Many flights during the holidays are sold out, which makes cancellations even more disruptive and during slower periods. That is especially true for smaller budget airlines that have fewer flights and fewer options for rebooking passengers. Only the largest airlines, including American, Delta, and United, have interline agreements that let them put stranded customers on another carrier's flights. This will be the first holiday season since a Transportation Department rule took effect that requires airlines to give customers an automatic cash refund for a canceled or significantly delayed flight. Most air travelers were already eligible for refunds, but they often had to request them. Passengers still can ask to get rebooked, which is often a better option than a refund during peak travel periods. That's because finding a last-minute flight on another airline yourself tends to be very expensive. When they rebook you, they will pay for the fare difference. If my flight to visit Grandma that I booked 6 months ago for $200 gets canceled, and I turn around and book a flight 4 hours from now for $400, I have to pay that difference, said Sally French, a travel expert at consumer affairs company NerdWallet. People traveling on budget airlines with fewer flights and no partnerships with other carriers may face a difficult choice in the event of a canceled flight. They will put you on the next flight outgoing, Spirit or Frontier Flight, but that could be a while from now. Sometimes waiting 3 days for the next flight is not going to work for you, and paying more to rebook on a big airline might be worthwhile. Some airlines are taking advantage of a provision in the new Transportation Department rule that defined a significant delay as 3 hours for a domestic flight and 6 hours for an international flight. According to Brett Snyder, who runs the Cranky Flyer website, airlines that previously issued refunds for shorter delays, Delta, United, and JetBlue, for example, are now using the government standard. Delayed flights increase the risks that bags will get lost. Passengers who get separated from their bags should report it to the airline and ask what the airline will cover. Links to the customer service plans of major U.S. airlines are at the bottom of this page. And planning ahead for 2025. Airline fares were up 4.7% in November compared with a year earlier, according to U.S. government figures. But early 2025 is a good time to start planning next year's trips, including for spring breaks and summer vacations. Because travel is so popular, you're not going to find anything that feels very rock bottom, but January and February are great times to plan for March, April, and May, said Loretta Mata, an editor at travel guide publisher Lonely Planet. If you want to go to Paris in the spring, you need to be thinking about that in January. And from Washington, shutdown averted, but fault line seen. While late deal gets done, Speaker Johnson's grip on gavel is tested. One of the most turbulent sessions of Congress in the modern era is about to make way for the next one. Midnight passage of the government shutdown package put in sharp focus the political fault lines emerging in Washington as President-elect Trump returns to the White House, House Speaker Mike Johnson fights for his job, and Republicans sweep into control of Congress in the next year. It took bipartisan votes to keep government running for a few more months and provide about $100 billion for disaster aid. Working together, the Republicans and Democrats showed the House and Senate can still function to accomplish the basics of governing. After a chaotic few days in the House, it's good news that the bipartisan approach in the end prevailed, said Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. It's a good lesson for next year. Both sides have to work together. But next year, with big GOP promises to cut taxes and slash spending, while also pumping in new money to fund Trump's border security and deportation operations, Republicans tend to go it alone. We are set up for a big and important new start in January, Johnson said. We can't wait to get started. The first vote of the new House, when lawmakers are sworn in January 3rd, is on electing a speaker. That leaves Johnson little time to calm the criticism after facing stark blowback over his management of the government shutdown fight. He was never the House Republicans' top choice for the Speaker's office, but emerged when they couldn't agree on a replacement once they kicked out the last Speaker, Kevin McCarthy. The government shutdown saga exposed the limits of Johnson's influence over his majority and Trump when his first two funding plans collapsed. It's unclear if Johnson will have enough support from his ranks. It's always been the big question, right? Said Tim Burchett from Tennessee, among the handful of mainly fiscal conservatives who cast their votes to oust McCarthy. Ultimately, and let's be honest, that's going to be a large portion of that. It will be up to Trump. Yet Johnson was able to buy time, convincing Trump he would meet the president-elect's demands to raise the debt limit in the new year. He worked hard to stay close to Trump, and the investment shows. Johnson insisted Trump was certainly happy with the final deal. The speaker did a good job here, given the circumstances, posted Trump ally Elon Musk, who was mentioned as a potential replacement, since the speaker does not need to be a member of Congress. Johnson has no votes to spare, having actually lost House seats in the fall election, shrinking his majority. Democrats will oppose him with their own speaker candidate, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries. Clearly, Johnson is not up to the task, Trump ally and podcast provocateur Steve Bannon said at a conservative conference. He doesn't have what we call the right stuff, the combination of guts and moxie and savvy and toughness. Musk, the world's richest man, is fast becoming Capitol Hill's most feared influencer. He intervened in the government shutdown debate using the enormous power of his social media platform X to ravage Johnson's original 1,500-page bipartisan bill, swiftly tearing it down. In post after post, he unleashed criticisms and sometimes inaccurate claims, sending his army of online followers to figuratively flood the Capitol, warning that if lawmakers voted for it, he would take them on with primary elections. His vast wealth and America PAC backed up his threats. "Kill the bill," Musk demanded. Democrat after Democrat and at least one Republican turned on Musk, seeing not a beloved billionaire wading into the political process, but a symbol of extreme U.S. wealth and power run amok. Senator Bernie Sanders decried the health care and other bipartisan provisions stripped from the bill to scale it back, as Musk demanded. "The precedent that has been set today in Congress should upset every American," Sanders said in a statement announcing his refusal to support the final bill. He voted against it. "It appears that from now on, no major legislation can be passed without the approval of the wealthiest person in this country. That's not democracy. That's oligarchy." One of the most outspoken conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus is Representative Chip Roy, who led the charge against Trump's demand for a debt limit hike as part of the government shutdown package. The very unpopular congressman from Texas, Chip Roy, is getting in the way as usual, Trump posted on social media. He suggested there should be a primary challenge against Roy. Republican obstructionists have to be done away with. Roy, though, has his own popular following as a leading deficit hawk. He held his own, ignoring Trump's attack and admonishing his colleagues not to go along with Trump's demand to boost the debt ceiling and allow more borrowing. "You go out and campaign saying you're going to balance the budget, and then you come in here," he shouted, choking up at times during the floor debate. "It's embarrassing." In the end, 38 House Republicans, including Roy, sided with the Democrats and tanked Trump's debt ceiling increase. Republicans will have to raise the debt ceiling in the first half of the year, and there will be a large price to pay. As part of the deal Johnson made to pass the temporary government funding package, he struck a gentleman's agreement behind closed doors with his fellow Republicans ahead of Friday's vote. House Republicans agreed to slash about $2.5 trillion from federal spending over the next decade as part of the emerging tax cut bill in exchange for boosting the debt limit, as will need to happen to avoid a federal default. And from Glen Carbon, Southwest Illinois, a major production area for U.S. horseradish supply. All grain farmers have something to occupy their time in the winter, but for Craig and Kenny Engling, the off-season is even busier as they harvest horseradish. "I started farming corn, soybeans, and wheat back in the early 80s, and the farm economy was just horrible," said Craig Engling. "My dad had an in on the horseradish business, and that's how I got my start in 1985. Now, C&K Horseradish in Glen Carbon grows about 170 acres of the specialty crop in one of the highest production areas of the country. We have a very rich, deep topsoil in the Madison, St. Clair, and Monroe County area. I think about 60% of the horseradish world supply comes out of here." His son Kenny said they begin planting in March as soon as the ground is soft enough to work, using roots from the previous season's crop. "Generally, after 9 to 10 months, it's starting to hit its peak yield, and that is the harvest window we are trying to meet for quality and tonnage. The horseradish can be harvested any time of year, but winter is ideal," Everything about horseradish is hot, from the flavor to holding heat. So if you're harvesting it in hot months, you really have to manage it to keep it from spoiling. And it's labor-intensive a process. Once it comes out of the field, every plant has to be gone through by hand. They have to be trimmed, sorted by different grades, and packaged accordingly. It then gets housed in a cold storage facility kept at 28 degrees before being sold to customers across the country in the wholesale market. The process begins again in March when harvest and planting often overlap. A lot of times it's a 13-month season. Every year it's different. There were some years we started harvest as early as September, and there have been years when we're running as late as June. The angling cited labor as the biggest challenge in the horseradish industry. They have been fortunate with one other full-time employee and a dozen local seasonal workers who return annually. But they are looking into more automated field harvesting equipment so their employees can spend more time sorting. As for the growing season, Kenny said pest measure was high this year for unknown reasons, and the drought made the crop look poor early on, but late fall rains helped the crop finish strong. The roots really start putting their weight on going into the fall, and so a wetter fall is where you start getting your bigger yields, Kenny said, noting that yields are determined by the pound. Winter weather can also affect the crop. Heavy snow is a double-edged sword, as it would slow down harvest, but potentially increase yields. Those roots are deep into the ground. If they're under the frost and can keep growing, I've seen 20% yield increases over wintertime. Looking forward, Kenny Engling said they have been working to increase production to fill demand. But it is a defined market, so you have to have the market share. It's all marketed a year in advance, so you have to know what you can and can't do and be able to market towards that target. As he nears retirement, Craig said he has enjoyed watching the next generation take charge. It's kind of neat watching the changes, the new ambition, and the new ideas come to life. Venezuela nonprofit restores discarded toys for the holidays from Venezuela. The doll's golden curls are intact, and soon her head is too. One by one, the toys that show the wear and tear of love are restored for the holidays, sewed and combed, stuffed and dressed. From Barbie dolls to a Kung Fu panda with a paw raised in triumph, the toys left behind by children are made ready to be gifted once more. This is the work of the Hospital of Stuffed Animals, a project in Venezuela's capital. As volunteers pick up the pace this time of year, it began with a mother's question, what to do with all the toys once children outgrow them? Miranda Acosta, a 63-year-old architect who represents the Hospital for Soft Toys, said the idea came from Lillian Gluck, a teacher who in 2017 considered what to do with some of her children, what to do as some of her children left the country. Throw the toys out? Let them fall apart? Neither were good options. She decided to wash them, fix them up, and donate them to pediatric hospitals at the University Hospital in Caracas. Months later, encouraged by the response, she opened the Hospital for Soft Toys at her home as a nonprofit foundation that also collects and restores other toys and educational games. About 60 volunteers now meet at least twice a week. The project estimates it's recycled about 70,000 toys in the past 7 years. The foundation also receives donations from abroad that can include school supplies, diapers, shoes, food, and candy. All have been welcome in the country that has seen years of economic crisis and renewed political anxiety after July's election. Restoring a soft toy's nubby fur or entangling a doll's hair for another round of affection is also helpful for the volunteers. By doing this, all of us who come here are in therapy, a therapy of support for one another, said Sylvia Haber, 72, who has volunteered for almost 3 years. Myrna Morales, a 76-year-old teacher and another volunteer, called it one of the best experiences I've ever had. Maria Polo, 84, was mending a giant stuffed animal. The work is not complicated, she said, because they all have been seamstresses and menders at one time or another. On some days, it seems the number of toys to repair runs low, but then the doorbell rings. More boxes and bags have arrived. The toys are delivered to hospitals and schools in poor neighborhoods, but also to homes for older people, anyone who needs a little bit of affection. Each restored toy comes with a message encouraging its new owner to embrace the value of recycling. "Hello, I'm your new friend," it says. "I am a doll with experience because I played with another girl. Love me and take care of me, and I will do the same with you. When you grow up, give me to another girl who will love me and play with me just like you." And from the sports page, Kales Noble paints custom shoes to express artistic side off the court. From Berkeley. With practice still a few hours away, Jada Noble sits down at her desk and squeezes some fresh black paint right onto the top of her left hand, just below the thumb. There's already some white and red, a little bit of pink and purple along her wrist. Of course, paint always covers her university-issued California women's basketball wear, too. Noble works intently to touch up a pair of custom shoes she's painted for Indiana guard Miles Rice, one of the two boxes Noble sent him for his first season with the Hoosiers after transferring from Washington State. "Every time I do something, I'm working on a skill, some brushwork, some handwork, something. But I'm getting better and it's therapeutical. I feel like this is my me time, all wrapped into one. It does get stressful, but don't get me wrong, but if I keep a good kind of rhythm going every day, then it's smooth sailing." Stacked just inside the door of her Berkeley apartment are boxes of in-progress shoes that Noble is trying to finish in any spare time she has between basketball and her graduate business studies at Cal. She transferred from Washington and moved many of her art materials from Seattle to the Bay Area, including several large paintings. It's her passion, sure, but also a business, and her catchy Instagram handle is J. Casso, like Picasso. Rice is a redshirt sophomore at Indiana who pulled out of the 2022-23 season in Pullman, Washington, while undergoing treatment for Hodgkin's lymphoma, which he completed on March 9, 2023, with the final chemotherapy round. He wore Spider-Man-themed shoes painted by Noble in his first home game and will carefully choose when to bring them out so they stay clean. "I thought they were very beautiful, just made the thoughts that I had come to life," Rice said. She did two shoes. One was a Spider-Man and one that's one of my favorite superheroes, and it had my cancer ribbon on it as well, so it was kind of close to me. Rice plans to repeat customer and send Noble more shoes later this season, and also order some for his family as gifts. Noble and Rice became friends when they both were in Washington. "They're beautiful. She obviously extremely talented. I'm just so grateful that she thought of me and that I inspired her to create such a beautiful piece of art. Very grateful for her. The one thing you love about Jada is she's such a genuine and authentic person. She's going to be who she is, and that's what you love about her." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, December 23rd. Please stay tuned.